Welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Jessie Lowry. I'm the Director of Conservation and Research here at the zoo. And today we have a very special guest, Beth Armstrong, who is the founder of the Zoos and Aquariums Committing to Conservation Conference and also founder of Finding Your Voice, Women and Conservation Summit. So we'll get to you, Beth, here in just a moment. I always like to start off the show by kind of talking about the role of a modern zoo and how Blank Park Zoo is helping to save animals in the wild. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. But I see it as a window to the wild, a place where we can invite the community and schools and kids and people of all ages to come in and get a glimpse of the beauty that nature has to offer. Look into the eyes of a tiger, see baby rhinos. We just announced that we're having another baby rhino this year, and get that warm, fuzzy feeling that we all do when we see these amazing, fantastic creatures. But it's our role as an AZA-accredited zoo to turn that warm, fuzzy feeling into a real conservation action, something that each of us can do to help save animals in the wild. And there is a lot of things that everybody can do to save animals in the wild. And one of the easiest things to do here in Des Moines is just to visit Blank Park Zoo, because a portion of every single dollar that we make goes to in-the-wild conservation. But we also try to be sustainable as possible here at the zoo. We know that our consumption of products, especially single-use plastics, has a direct effect on wildlife. Wildlife can mistake it for food or get entangled in it. So we are really working to decrease our use of that at the zoo and encourage our audience to do so as well. You can recycle your phone with Blank Park Zoo. All new cell phones contain a mineral called coltan, and that's mined in precious gorilla and okapi habitat in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So just by bringing your old cell phone to the zoo, you can help save animals. We'll send it to an organization called EcoCell, and they recycle it, decreasing the demand for a new coltan. And they also send a donation to the Grace Gorilla Sanctuary in the DRC. So there's another easy thing you can do to help Blank Park Zoo save animals. But the backbone of what a zoo can do is the support of the heroes that are out on the front lines, those field organizations, those individuals who are working to save the animals in their range countries. And we give financial grants to these kinds of organizations all over the world to support hornbills in Thailand and snow leopards in Mongolia and giraffe in Namibia and rhinos in Indonesia and so many other projects, including projects right here at home for butterflies and bees and other native wildlife. Those are the folks that know what the conditions are and what's happening, what's the root causes of species decline. And we can use the power of the zoo, even a small zoo like Blank Park Zoo, to help further their programs and make a real impact. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to reach out to Beth Armstrong, who, by the way, is my mentor in conservation. And we had her on the show a couple weeks ago, and she's got a ton of great experience and stories to tell. And so we wanted to do another session here today to talk about Zoos and Aquariums Committing to Conservation, the ZAC conference, and kind of what relationships have been made and resulted from ZAC. And if we've got time, we'll talk about Finding Your Voice as well. So Beth, welcome again to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.
Oh, thanks, Jess. It's a pleasure.
So you and I are gearing up for the first ever regional ZAC conference that's going to be held at Otterbein in Columbus, Ohio in March. But let's first talk more about the conference in general. And tell me, let's start talking about some stories of organizations and relationships that have resulted from the ZAC conference and how we can see the impact on the ground.
Well, again, we addressed this a little bit in the interview a couple of weeks ago. ZAC is Zoos and Aquariums Committing to Conservation Conference. It's held every 2 years. It's hosted by a variety of zoos that sort of step up and offer to be the host. And the intent is to bring together field people, field researchers, community-based organizations, NGOs, along with zoo personnel so that we can connect them together, that a zoo may hear a lecture by a particular field project in Malaysia or Indonesia or Guatemala or Congo or wherever, and they are inspired to go up and speak to that speaker and say, hey, what is it we can do to help you? How can we assist? How can we partner? So it was really started to start the conversation in 1995 was the first ZAC hosted by Columbus Zoo. It was a way to get everybody in the room to get talking, because of course that's always it, isn't it? It's all about the informal networking, the sharing of stories, the being inspired by someone else's passion and commitment to make a difference, that just may be that nudge to get another zoo or another zoo personnel at a particular zoo that says, you know what, I think our zoo needs to get on board this. And so, when we talk about projects, I mean, I'll bring up Mark Ankernes, who's been a member of our steering committee at ZAC for ages, since we put it in place in 1999. But Mark was at the very first ZAC in 1995 and has been at every one since. And that was a startup NGO that he and his then wife, Isabel, had started in Malaysia. It was an Orang project primarily. It's very broad-based now. They sort of heard about it, came to it. Our schedule was full, and they asked to get on the schedule. I couldn't get them on. But what I did was arrange for them to have a meeting room on Zoo Day. And then we let everybody at the ZAC conference know, hey, here's a couple of researchers. They're doing some work in Malaysia. You may want to come and hear them just informally talk about their project. And that's what we did. And that, you know, as you know, because you know Mark very well now, that has turned into one of the major funded projects through zoos. And again, it just started with a couple of field researchers that said, hey, we heard about this conference, we're going to go. And then they started networking. And right after that conference, our then director at Columbus Zoo, when I was still working there, Don Winstall, he was able to get funding for, I think, a boat for them. That with is an outboard motor. And that was our first step into supporting Mark's project in Malaysia. And again, it's those coming together on an anecdotal storytelling level that often is what connects people, more so than, say, the data and the scientific aspect of it. Not that that's not important. It is important, especially when dealing with enacting policies at a governmental level. But it is often the very touching stories that affect people.
That's what I was just going to add. There's something to be said for meeting someone face to face, shaking their hand, hearing a story firsthand from the field, because that's, you know, what will just imprint on your brain. And you can be inspired. You can feel the passion of these folks and the challenges and successes they're having in the field. And then as a zoo professional, I just remember, you know, at all of the ZAC conferences, sitting in the audience and working through in my mind how my zoo could help and how this maybe mirrors some of the education programs that we do with students here in Iowa, or how our marketing and our development, departments could help drive change for this organization. And you just start putting the building blocks together, because zoos, get so many visitors throughout the year, that we've got this great, platform that we can help tell the stories of the field researchers.
Yeah, and to me that, you know, there's a couple of things that I was thinking about when you were talking about that, is that ZAC in and of itself doesn't solve the problem. ZAC conferences creates an atmosphere for that connection. And exactly what you said, you were sitting in the audience, somebody gave a talk about wherever, a project in Uganda, say, Lily. And you were inspired by what you heard. And I also think what's really important about ZAC is that because it feels very informal and very welcoming, and I've suffered from this certainly in my early days in zoos, where you're a little bit intimidated mm-hmm. about going up to this, oh, this is a big deal researcher, they're very well known, and you feel like, who am I? But I think what ZAC has always been able to do is tear down those perceived barriers, mm-hmm. and you find that field people are just like us. You know, they're out there slogging away trying to get good work done on very little money, And they usually, you know, 99.9% of the time, they are welcoming for partners and would love to figure out how to work more with Sue's. So I think that whole thing of you be sitting in the audience, being inspired, and then your mind starts working. That's not Zach's solving the issue. That's Zach creating the environment so that everybody finds a way to connect and solve and support field conservation projects around the world. That's what I love about it.
That's exactly right.
It's
just creating a party
to create this great environment.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, Beth, I want to tell you, and you've heard this story before about one of my examples of a relationship that was the result of a Zach conference. So my first Zach conference was in 2011 at Woodland Park, and this is when I was still a zookeeper, and I was very, very green, very, very new to this whole field of work. And we went to a breakout session about education, and Eddie from Health and Harmony was there, and we all sat at this very intimate group. There's probably about 20 people there, and Eddie told a story about working in Indonesia, and she had a little suitcase on wheels, like a little carry-on suitcase you'd take on an airplane, and she was walking from tiny village to tiny village, teaching the community and mostly younger children, school kids, about the beautiful biodiversity in their backyards, the amazing hornbills and orangutans and so many other amazing rare creatures. And she didn't have access to the basic educational supplies that she needed. So both, art supplies and, other books and resources. And it was just such a simple ask. And I remember my heart was pounding because this was the first conference and Eddie was that big field researcher that I looked up to, and I couldn't believe that I was going to get to meet her. And I just raised my hand and said, Blank Park Zoo can help. And it was that simple. And what she ordered items that she needed from us. And one was laminated maps of all the continents in the world. And then she told us which animals the kids wanted to learn about. And then we cut those out and put Velcro on the back. And so you could Velcro the animals to which continents they occur naturally. And it's such a simple thing, but she just didn't have the resources to do that. We ended up shipping boxes and boxes of supplies and educational resources to her. And now we have continued that relationship since 2011 and support them on an annual basis. And Health and Harmony is one of our heritage projects here at the zoo. And just really quickly, what Health and Harmony does is provides free or low-cost health care to these remote villages in Indonesia. They'll go in and they'll teach folks how to garden organically, how to remove invasive plant species from the local forest, how to take care of their garbage in an environmentally friendly way. And in return, the organization has these health clinics that are in vans, and they go around and they'll give people immunizations and dental exams and toothbrushes, a lot of these things that the folks would not have access to any other way. And so that's just a wonderful example of that holistic view of conservation and helping to save animals by helping the local people. And so we're really proud to support Health and Harmony, and it all started at Zach.
Yeah, I remember when Eddie gave that talk, and that's, Lisa Daybeck, Dr. Lisa Daybeck, who organized the 2011 Zach conference for us, and Lisa was on the board up until recently and now is an advisor to the Zach committee. But I remember when Eddie gave her talk that the entire room was just blown away by this concept of communities earning chits, credits that then could be used for again, dental work or medical work or whatever. And it was brilliant. And I think that was at Woodland Park Zoo in 2011 was when we officially, Zach started giving away small grants, and Health and Harmony was one of those small grants that we gave away. And that money comes from a portion of the registration fee. We always make sure to take a cut of each registration fee at the Zach conference, and then that will go into usually around $800 or $900, $1,200 grants. That's on average now. And I just remember, you know, $1,200 does make a difference. At the very least, what I love about the Zach grants at these conferences is that we are saying to these people, we see you, we appreciate you, we recognize the good work that you're doing. And I just remember Health and Harmony, it literally blew that room away. Mm-hmm. It was so interesting.
Eddie is so charismatic, and the organization is just wonderful. Beth, yeah. Can you tell us about the Cassisi Project?
The Cassisi Project, I love it. In fact, I was just doing some work for them because I sit on their board now this morning. And the Cassisi Project is in Uganda, and it is affiliated with the Kibale Chimp Project. And the Kibale Chimpanzee Project is a project that the Columbus Zoo had supported. It was one of our very first holistic approaches to conservation when I was at Columbus. We started in 1992. And again, just going back to this, Dr. Richard Wrangham is from Harvard University. Richard is extremely well-known, really world-renowned. So talk about being intimidated, like, oh, my gosh, it's Richard Wrangham kind of feeling. I met him at a chimp conference via another colleague, and I just simply approached him and said, listen, do you need anything educational-wise with your project, the Kibale Chimp Project? So that's how Columbus started working with Kibale. And Richard's wife, Dr. Elizabeth Ross, started the Cassisi Project, which is a just hands-on education program in Uganda. And I love it because it deals with a lot of girls' issues. They build dormitories for the girls. They do things that I know this is a simple thing. We don't think about it. But simply when girls have their periods, they may not go to school because they simply don't have sanitary napkins, and that's something we don't think about in this country. But something as simple as that, they buy bicycles, they have education programs, they have beekeeping. It's a phenomenal holistic look at conservation education within Uganda. And of course it's somewhat affiliated with chimpanzees, but it's also a bigger, more holistic look as well. I just think it's a fabulous on the ground, let's address these issues that nobody really talked about, that it's difficult sometimes for girls to even walk to school because they may have to walk by village, you know, other villages where maybe there's a bunch of boys and they're bothering them, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's things we may not think about here, but it's so important that not just boys, but girls receive an education and they feel comfortable getting to school. I mean, I remember when I was at Brevard Zoo after Columbus Zoo, our teens at Columbus did beautiful fundraisings and they were doing painted faces, and they made a bunch of money doing painted faces, and they decided to support Elizabeth Ross's project, the Cassisi Project, and we were going to do soccer uniforms for the boys. And then Elizabeth got in touch with me, and she said, well, you know what, nobody ever talks about the girls over here, and all the girls' schools have netball teams for these girls. So the Brevard Zoo, you know, supported the printing of their netball uniforms, all that sorts of stuff. And it's working with people on the ground that can redirect your energy and your commitment and your funding because they know how best it's going to work. And I just like the sort of no-nonsense approach of this project. I find it very inspiring. It just gets the work done. And there are oftentimes one of our speakers at the ZAC conferences because I think they have taken such a holistic approach to it.
And Elizabeth is just a visionary. I always learn so much every time I hear her speak at a conference. So I want to kind of mention one of my favorite projects. Whenever I talk about the holistic view of conservation, and in my mind, the holistic view of conservation means this, that good conservation projects take in consideration the health and welfare of individual animals, the health of animal populations, the health of the local environment, and most importantly, the health and needs and aspirations of the local people who are sharing the spaces with wildlife and all
Absolutely.
Over the world.
Yeah. You cannot do one without the other.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And whenever I talk about that, I always use conservation fusion as my example. So the founder, Susie Lewis, she lives just a couple hours away from Des Moines in Omaha, and she started conservation fusion to uplift the local communities in remote villages in Madagascar to help lemurs and tortoises. They've got, of course, all of the lemur species that are endemic to Madagascar, are some of the most endangered primates on the planet. They've got radiated tortoises, which each tortoise will bring about $10,000 on the black market for the illegal pet trade. And she works very closely with Madagascar Biodiversity Project, which is led by Ed Lewis, her husband. And they do everything from tree planting to medical, you know, education to building schools. They built the Dream School with the help of Blank Park Zoo and other organizations a couple years ago, where kids can come and learn about lemurs and tortoises, but also math and reading and hygiene and gardening. They've worked with showing folks how to install and use rocket stoves that use less resources to heat homes and cook their food and produce less smoke, by the way, which really helps the local women's health. They show them how to improve their gardening, to grow some of their own food. And now the Dream School has 175 kids. And so Susie was surprised, I think, at first, but excited to hear from the community several months ago that they would like her to help them build Dream School 2.0. And so Blank Park Zoo, we gathered a lot of volunteers and staff members here, and we created the Iowa Dream Team that is helping Susie and Conservation Fusion plan some events this summer to help build Dream School 2.0. And she's just always brings back amazing stories. And I'll just share one here today that, you know, the kids were learning about the lemurs and tortoises and the tortoise story of the illegal pet trade. And a couple kids were walking home from class and saw a whole bunch of these radiated tortoises laying in the sand on their back. And a couple guys running away. Luckily, those were the poachers. Luckily, there was a hole in their boat, so they were not able to get away. And in the meantime, these little kids went and told their parents, just like Susie and the other educators had asked them to, that there were poachers in the area, and those poachers got caught. And this has not just happened once. It's happened a handful of times now that these little children who have very little, who are inspired even with, you know, the challenges that they have in this area, are inspired to take care of their tortoises, protect their lemurs, and they've turned into little poacher catchers. And so what a fantastic impact. Blank Park Zoo supports Conservation Fusion on an annual basis, and we're delighted to have met Susie at the ZAC conference.
Yeah, you know, I think with Susie, she's indicative. She received a ZAC grant from the 2011 Woodland Park ZAC as well, and she was kind of an unknown. I mean, she came out of the zoo world, and then she started her own NGO. But there was something about her that the ZAC steering committee, we thought, no, there's something here. Let's give it a shot. And I, she's told me since then that, that just that small grant made such a difference, because then she could leverage that with other granting organizations and say, hey, I just received the ZAC conservation grant and they believe in me and da-da-da. And she was able to use that as a step up to get more grants. But I think what's important, again, about people like Susie, and this is where what I love so much about Columbus Zoo when we first started doing our conservation, is that oftentimes in the past, zoos were looking at very, very, very scientific aspect of field conservation. And that is not to denigrate that. That is super important, like we talked about before, for policy changes. But it is, at Columbus, we figured out it is all about relationships, nothing but relationships. It is our relationship to that field person. It's the field person or the NGO person's relationship to the local community's relationship to the environment around them and other local communities, and it all comes down to that. And I think that story of the kids is representative. That is their community. that people were coming into, and they had a vested interest in protecting it. And I think that is so important that we always look at conservation from a very practical, on-the-ground, hands-on, holistic approach that always includes health issues, benefits, and employment for local community, buy-in from local community, ownership from local communities. This is so, again, it's not such a radical idea now. People kind of get it now, but years ago, 25 years ago or longer, it was kind of a big deal. People were like, what? What are you talking about? But I think, again, we understood at Columbus that you had to really look at, and those were the kind of grants that we gave. We were looking for someone from a holistic approach. We didn't want somebody just going in and getting their data for their PhD and then leaving that community. We wanted somebody who was invested and built relationships and kept their word, and that we, in turn, as a funding community, as a zoo, that we would keep our word as well. And I think, again, Susie, just because she's such a great communicator, she's somebody that you would want to fund because she always gets back to you. I mean, usually you just require a year-end report and maybe a couple of one-liners throughout the year with some photos. Susie is always keeping people up to date. You know, another field researcher who always comes to the ZAC conferences, and her husband as well, Arnaud, is Patty Medici, who does taper research in Brazil. Patty is a brilliant example of always communicating with your funders and involving them and letting them, people feel like they're a part of something that's so important. And Susie has that quality of really bringing people in so that you want to get on board, that you want to support this project, because not only is she enthusiastic about it and she's very holistic in her approach, but there is this feeling like what she is doing is truly making a difference. But she's taking her lead from the community, and that's what's so important about it and so essential.
Thank you so much, Beth, for this wonderful conversation. We're going to have you back on so we can hear about more field projects all around the world. Where do people find out more about the ZAC conference?
You can get on the website, which is zaccconference.com. And the homepage will have sort of updates on upcoming conferences, the regional conference. And then if you want to get on the Facebook page, it's just called ZAC, ZACC Conference, two different words. And that should get you on the Facebook page.
Thank you again for all that you do for wildlife and all of the guidance that you have given me personally for my career, Beth. And that's about all the time that we have for today on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. Please go to blankparkzoo.com to learn about all of our conservation projects and special events, and check out our Facebook page. We will see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.